speaking today with Chris Bell, who is running in the special election for Senate District 17. Chris, why are you running for this office?
It is an extraordinary opportunity to not only take back a seat in the Texas Senate and flip a district from red to blue, but it's also an extraordinary opportunity to work on and impact the issues that we all care about, like healthcare insurance and public school education and ethical reforms. And I spent 2 years running for governor of Texas talking about the not only those issues, but other important matters as well. And feel very strongly that the state is in need of a new direction. And while this isn't the governor's office, a seat in the Texas State Senate is an incredible post from which to impact state policy and those issues that I care about. So I've jumped in. I'm very glad I did, and very excited by the way the race is going.
As you say, you did run for governor 2 years ago. What's your assessment of Texas 2008 versus 2006? Better, worse, about the same?
Well, it depends on what you mean. From the political standpoint, it's a much brighter day. From the Democratic perspective, overall, I don't think there's been a whole lot of change in the state. And I really do believe that if we don't change the direction, primarily when it comes to public school education and economic opportunity and access to health care insurance and the overall ethical climate, we can talk a little bit more about that hopefully, I think that we risk falling further and further behind. The Republican leadership in Austin has a very different perspective and basically wants all of us to put on rose-colored glasses and pretend everything's fine because we have a strong energy base here and we haven't suffered many of the economic pitfalls that other states are going through right now. But anyone who has followed the history of our state knows that these things are cyclical. And the market, the oil and gas market, is going to change at some point. We can't rely on that forever. And I think it's also interesting that such a large number of people here in our state haven't been really seen any of the benefits from what's going on in the oil and gas sector. So I'm very concerned. If I thought everything was fine, if I thought the trains were going to run on time, even if more Democrats didn't get elected, I would have stayed on the sidelines. That's where I was, and I was perfectly content to stay there and help other Democrats get elected this time around. But this vacancy occurred, and I really did think that it was a chance to get back in the arena and have an impact on some issues that I think are very important for the future of Texas.
Now, you have run for other offices before, most recently governor in 2006. And what would you say you've learned from those experiences, and how is that going to shape the way you run this year for Texas Senate?
Well, the advantage of having run for governor so recently is that not only does it really connect you with what's going on all across the state and give you that network of support to call upon, but it does give you a very up-close and personal look at the issues and how they're impacting our state. And it's not just political rhetoric when I talk about and others talk about what's going on in our public school system. The United States as a whole is falling behind other countries because of our educational system. And here in Texas, we seem to be a little further behind when you look at SAT scores and lousy college entrance numbers and the soaring dropout rate, which has really reached epidemic proportions. And it's not just education for education's sake, but how that's going to impact the future of Texas. Where is our labor force going to come from? Where are companies going to draw from? Who's going to want to move here if they can't find people with a high enough education level to fill the positions that they're going to have? These are all very legitimate questions, and I think that for this to change, folks are going to have to be elected in the state of Texas who really are willing to engage in sort of a revolution. And we're perfectly positioned to do so because of the size of our state. We have saddled the rest of the nation with an over-reliance on standardized testing. I think perhaps we can help point the way out and pave the way out and be a model because of what's going on here and because of some of the challenges that we face. We can take a negative and turn it into a huge positive, but we can't do that without new leadership.
One of the things you talked about a lot when you were running for governor in 2006 was how budgets are moral documents. You know, what does that mean today, and how would you use that philosophy in the Senate in 2009?
Well, they are moral documents in that they are supposed to reflect the priorities of your state and the priorities of society. And when you look at what we have done with the budget in the state of Texas, primarily the cuts to the children's health insurance program, our outright refusal to really get behind and fund public school education at a level that we know it's deserving of, then I really think you have to question those priorities. And that goes a little bit back to what I was saying about ethics and why I'm so concerned about that, because I really do believe that until we improve the overall ethical quality of our state government, then you're never going to see the priorities get in line in the way we believe they should. Right now, there's not a great deal of mystery what happens in Austin. Whenever there's a big bill passed, all you have to do is follow a little money trail, and usually you see the motivation for that. And with people being allowed to contribute unlimited amounts of money to state campaigns and certainly creating an unlevel playing field, those without a paid lobbyist, those without that kind of voice in Austin, their concerns get swept to the back burner. And so we really have created this pay-to-play mentality in Austin, and that's going to have to change before people are really going to start treating budgets as moral documents, which I believe they are.
So what's your prescription for changing the ethical environment?
I think you start with campaign contributions and start limiting the amount that can be contributed to campaigns. Probably seems a little bit interesting coming from me because, you know, one of the biggest stories from the governor's race was the large amount of money that one of the trial lawyers was willing to contribute to my campaign to try to help me have enough money there in the closing days. But as I've said, I don't think any Democrat should be required to fight with one hand tied behind their back. And these are the rules as they've been drawn and now protected by the Republican leadership, and we all play by those rules, and everybody knows it's expensive to run for office. But at some point, something has to give. The federal government woke up to this fact a long time ago and has greatly limited the amount that any one individual or political action committee can contribute to a campaign, and it's tough, but folks are able to raise an adequate amount of money to run the races. Same is true in the city of Houston. And as a member of the city council, I helped tighten those rules to put further restrictions on soft money donations. But I think what you can accomplish, and you have to be realistic, and you have to try to keep those limits and at such a level that they do allow people to raise the amount of money that they're going to need to advertise and do what they need to do during the course of a campaign. But if you do that, and if you do so in a realistic fashion, everyone is in a position to raise what they need, and it levels the playing field and keeps any one individual or organization from having an exorbitant amount of power, an exorbitant amount of influence. And that's the problem, main problem as I see it in Austin right now. Furthermore, if you're going to make ethics a priority and say you're serious about it, you have to have a real enforcement mechanism. And the Texas Ethics Commission, quite frankly, is a toothless tiger. And you look at their record over the last 10 to 20 years and the fact that they have hardly launched any investigations, have hardly ever even issued a subpoena or anything else that would be required of any serious investigation, you see pretty clearly that we don't really have an enforcement mechanism, and that's desperately needed here in Texas.
Let's talk about the schools for a minute. Obviously, the subject of school finance reform has, been on the table for a while. The most recent thing that was done, of course, was to remake the tax structure so that property taxes were cut, a new business tax was implemented. There's plans for a greater reduction in the property tax in 2009. Some people don't like the new business tax because of the emphasis on smaller businesses. You know, where do you stand on this? What do you want to see done about it?
Well, I've always believed that too much of the burden for funding state government has been placed on property owners. It's one reason I helped lead the effort for the first property tax rate rollback as a member of the Houston City Council, and that is a trend which has continued under Mayor White, and I think it's a good trend that when you relieve some of that burden, you have to make it up. And the bottom line is that government's expensive. And at some point, I think people are going to come to that realization. And nobody wants higher taxes. And I've been involved in public service and politics for a long time now, and I can truthfully say that no one has ever come to me and said, Chris, please try to find a way to raise my taxes. That's just not the way people think. But meanwhile, people do want a high quality of services, and people want good quality schools. And I think most people realize that to fund our education system here in the state of Texas and at some point pay teachers a respectable professional wage, then you have to be willing to invest in Texas, and by doing so, invest in the future. The business tax is going to have to continue to be tinkered with. It's certainly not perfect. There was a tremendous number of loopholes that were left in it for this reason or that, and I think that if you want to realize more money from that, you're going to have to close some of those loopholes. And you're also going to have to remain open to other forms of revenue for the state. We already have legalized gambling here in Texas. We have legalized horse racing, and we have a state lottery. So the debate over whether Texas is going to have legalized gambling has passed us by. There are other types of gambling that could be allowed without really expanding gambling in the state in any great fashion, in ways that really just sort of make sense. And the state could realize a significant amount of new revenue. And I think you're going to have to be open to those types of measures if you really care about the future of Texas.
Awesome. And gambling's kind of a strange bedfellows issue because you'll have Republicans and Democrats on each side of it.
Right.
In fact, I know already that's kind of an issue among a couple of your Republican opponents in this race. What what specifically do you have in mind? Or are you just talking and the subject needs to be explored more?
No, I think that probably one issue measure that's been proposed in Austin that makes sense is allowing the existing racetracks that have been struggling greatly to survive to add video lottery terminals. All the studies show that a tremendous number of people track to Louisiana and outside our state in order to gamble in that fashion. Those facilities are situated to handle it, can be controlled, can be watched and monitored so that it doesn't get out of hand, significant new source of revenue can be created for the state of Texas because what the studies show can be produced as a result of the addition of those video lottery terminals. And not only that, but they could also expand the horse racing industry that's close to being on its deathbed here in the state of Texas, and obviously was passed years ago in order to increase the revenue coming into the state. So I just think, I know how people feel about it, but the original debate was that we shouldn't have legalized gambling here in the state of Texas. People had a chance to vote on that, and they disagree. They said that we should. And really, all the folks who have proposed the video lottery terminals at the racetracks were saying, is let us vote again. Let the public vote. And I think if they do, the public will probably hand, those folks a fairly resounding victory, and the state would have a new a source of revenue. But at some point, Charles, one thing that has always driven me crazy since my beginning days on city council is that government is always so reactive and is never proactive. Rarely. proactive. And what, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, the state's fine, we have the surplus, so we don't need to be doing anything. Well, nobody really believes that we're always going to have a surplus. And everybody knows that in order to really get the state back on track on the education front, healthcare, insurance, a lot of different areas, you're going to have to be willing to make an investment in it, and it's expensive. No one wants a tax increase, so let's look at some of these other measures that could possibly produce revenue for taxes.
Higher education has been in the news. Cost of public education has gone up considerably, public university education, since the tuition deregulation was passed in 2003 as part of the compromise during what was, you know, a pre-surplus year, quite a, you know, deficit year. Some people have called for the state of Texas to re-regulate public university tuition. What's your position on this?
We're going to have to. If there doesn't seem to be any way to curb the various colleges and universities' appetite for more dollars, and it's not completely their fault. You can't dramatically cut back on state appropriations to colleges and universities and not think that they're going to significantly raise the level of tuition. But it's gotten completely out of hand, and at a time when more and more jobs are requiring a college degree, and we're making it more and more difficult for folks to get a college education. And that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And so since they seem unwilling, I think that we're going to have to go back to some type of regulated system. But you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't say, okay, we're going back to a re-regulated system and we're going to limit how much public colleges and universities can raise their tuition, but we're not going to put any more money into the kitty. You know, the state's going to have to step up and be willing to make up some of that difference. But I think that's a commitment that we should be willing to make in order to keep a college education affordable. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the main point, I think, a high school education should either be preparing a young person to go to work or preparing a young person to go to college. And if some people think it should be, you know, completely focused on college, I disagree with that. But if that's going to be the goal, then we owe it to those students to keep it affordable, and we're simply not doing that.
There's also talk about possibly increasing the number of Tier 1 universities in Texas. University of Houston would seem to be a leading contender for that. How many Tier 1 universities should we have? We have two right now, and you know, what should the state be doing to get as many of those as you would want to that level?
Well, given the size of our state and the size of some of our cities, it's ridiculous that we only have two public Tier 1 universities. And of course that comes with how much money is going to be invested in research, and that's what controls that status. But also, given the challenges we face because of the top 10% rule, you know, an overwhelming number of people want to attend either Texas A&M or the University of Texas because those are the only two flagship or Tier 1 universities. Something that could relieve some of that burden would be if there were additional Tier 1 institutions. Obviously, I'm biased toward the University of Houston, but not only because I live here. It's also, you know, we're in the fourth largest state, in the fourth largest city in the entire country. And so there's no reason that the fourth largest city in the entire country shouldn't be home to a Tier 1 university, and U of H has done everything necessary and is perfectly positioned to become that third public Tier 1 university. And so I would be very supportive of the state stepping up and, you know, stepping in the gap and making up the gap so that they could have the necessary amount of money to achieve that status. I just think from an economic standpoint and a lot of other arguments that I've heard, it just makes absolute sense to move in that direction.
Senator John Cornyn was recently quoted in the news as saying that Texas's healthcare system should be a model for the rest of the country. What do you think about that?
Well, I hope that Rick Noriega, the Democratic challenger, speaks of nothing else from here until November 4th. It was an extraordinarily I mean, just an extraordinary statement that anybody could look at a state that, that has the highest number of uninsured in the entire country and say that we should be a model for the rest of the country because we made it on made it easy for doctors to escape liability. It just because you have a lot of doctors, and doesn't mean that, and a lot of people want to practice here, doesn't mean that your healthcare system is any kind of model. And it's especially interesting when you have groups of doctors stepping up and telling you that our healthcare system is desperately broken and in need of reform. Obviously, you know, Texas has moved in the wrong direction. That everybody wants the federal government to step up and come up with some kind of plan for universal health care insurance. I'm certainly supportive of that. But while Washington has been sitting back and twiddling their thumbs and doing nothing, many states have seized the initiative and started putting forth plans to insure more people. Texas, meanwhile, went the opposite direction and put measures in place that would insure fewer people, namely the cuts to the Children's Health Insurance Program. So there's no guarantee that the federal government's going to act overnight. What I'd like to see the state of Texas do is start trying to accomplish some of those things that we've seen in other states to at least lower the number of uninsured individuals in the time being, beginning with undoing those cuts that were made back in 2003 to the Children's Health Insurance Program.
Obviously, price of gasoline is on a lot of people's minds. What, if anything, should the state of Texas be doing to address energy policy in the state?
Well, I think the biggest thing that the state of Texas can do is get serious about incentivizing more research and development in the areas of alternative energy. There again, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about government being reactive instead of proactive. We've called ourselves the energy capital for a long time here in the state of Texas, and I think most people will tell you that if you want to continue to be the energy capital, you need to be investing in alternative forms of energy. Texas is perfectly positioned to be a leader in that regard, whether you're talking about biodiesel or wind or solar, any alternative form of energy. And instead of really trying to create incentive programs, we've been cutting back and doing next to nothing. Now, we find ourselves paying $3.54 a gallon for gasoline, and people are saying, well, why haven't we been doing this? Well, a lot of us have been saying for a long time we should be doing it. Now I think there will be the political will and the support out there to make that happen. But other states see what's going on and have been willing to invest and incentivize that kind of research and development, and it's time for Texas to get back in the game. Just legislative session a couple of years ago, back in 2007, there had been a program through the Texas Department of Agriculture to encourage more development and to incentivize more research and development in the area of biodiesel. Well, instead of growing that program or continuing that program, the legislature, in its infinite wisdom last time around, completely cut that program. While all of these other states have incentive programs for biodiesel, there we were eliminating ours. That's the kind of thinking that we're going to have to change if we're going to move forward. And I really think then that's our way out. That's our way out of this morass. And it's not mutually exclusive to the oil and gas industry. And the oil and gas industry understands that, that in order to continue to be viable going forward, there has to be that kind of investment in alternative forms of energy.
We touched on this a little bit before, but in 2006, you know, your campaign for governor suffered to some extent from a lack of funding. State Senate races are kind of expensive. Can you speak a little bit to what your campaign finance situation is for this race?
Well, it was a major consideration because that was a very tough, long campaign, and we went a very long time in the race for governor without having enough money to truly fight against individuals who had all the money in the world. And I never want to be in that situation again. You asked me what I learned earlier, and some of us, you know, learned a heck of a lot about the state, but you always probably learn more about politics in races that you lose, more so than the races that you win, because if you win, you just assume you did everything right. If you lose, you start figuring out that you might have done a few things wrong that you'd like to correct the next time around. So it certainly helps, and I didn't want to go through that again. And when people started recruiting me and encouraging me to take a look at this race for the state senate, I wanted to make sure that there were going to be people who saw it, that it was important and would be willing to invest in it. And there are. And I've been very, you know, I just announced back in the middle of July, and we're very pleased with the way fundraising is going. We're on track to raise what we need, and it will probably take, you know, $1 million to $2 million to run this race. People don't realize it, but state senate districts are bigger than congressional districts geographically. You cover a huge amount of territory, and to get the word out to that many voters costs a pretty penny. So there were assurances given before, and people have been honoring those pledges, and I've been very pleased by the reception I've been receiving as I call folks. I joke that it's, you know, very clear to me that I've left a serious, had left a serious void in people's lives by not calling them and asking them for money, and they were just basically sitting there with bated breath by their telephones waiting for me to call and ask. But in all seriousness, I like the response we're getting.
Okay. This doesn't really have anything to do with your race, but I can't help myself. One of your former opponents from 2006, Kinky Friedman, has talked about running again for governor in 2010 in the Democratic primary. Got any advice for him?
I think I'm going to stay out of that race for the time being. He hasn't called and asked me for my advice, and we'll see how that plays out. But it should be another interesting race, and you know, there are going to be a lot of twists and turns. And who would have thought that we would be sitting here in 2008 with such an optimistic outlook heading toward November? You know, 2006 was an extraordinary year, and the Democratic Party, for all intents and purposes, had hit rock bottom. Some of us were willing to hang in there and keep the fight alive, and I'm proud that we did so. And now we see that we all live to fight another day, and you know, people talk to me about 2006 all the time, and that's fine, but I've always been about looking forward and not backward, and for the most part I really enjoyed that race. It was fascinating to be a part of. Would I like for it to turn out in a different fashion? Sure. But it did, and you move on. And now, by maintaining a certain degree of flexibility, this opportunity has come along, and that's where my focus is, and it will continue to be. And I'm really excited about the possibility of getting to serve in the Texas State Senate.
All right, Chris Bell, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thanks, Charles.